Yeah. So prepared.
So prepared. Me and you, man, we're going to take this show on the road.
Hey, who's ready for an old version of Catching Foxes? Do you want to know why I mean old version?
Please tell me.
Your boy's a little buzzed.
Oh.
Your boy's a little buzzed.
Oh, it sure is an old episode of Catching Foxes. What are you celebrating?
The new job.
Nice.
So I went out for drinks with my buddy Orion from my Notre Dame cohort. It was wonderful. We had a great chat. So every time we meet, for the most part, although he lives a little bit south of town now that I'm not working up north. I should probably go by him. But we go to this bar called, well, it's actually a bar / restaurant called the Oakwood Club. And it's in my town of Oakwood, which, as you know, is incredibly douchey. So it's like this upscale bar / restaurant, kind of like a 60s steakhouse almost. Like there's no windows, very much kind of like out of Goodfellas or something. It's one of the greatest bars ever. I love it so much. So I had three drinks because I live close by, and your boy hadn't had a lot to eat or drink today. Whoopsies!
Oh, Fridays in Lent will get you.
Mm-hmm. Remember in college when we'd feel bad about Thursdays in Lent, we would still drink. Remember in college when we'd go out on Holy Thursday?
You know what's funny is I was just talking to some friends and we're all trying to plan a big old get together.
Yeah.
And we're now in the month of May trying to plan it. Like,
yeah.
All of March didn't work.
That's how it works. Didn't work. Yeah.
I know. And I said to him, I go, I hate getting older. Do you guys remember when we didn't have, like, the earliest time we would plan something would be like at 9 p.m. that night. And now it's like, let's go. And now, nothing. So we finally picked a day. And I think I accidentally just booked an out of town event.
That is the most you thing ever. And I can feel my blood pressure rising after hearing that.
So I'm looking at this right now. And my wife put the date in our shared calendar. Just, so it wasn't
okay,
on there.
Okay, stop. Can you just have Shannon handle your dates?
So we've talked about this.
I don't know. I thought about this the other day. I was like, Shannon should just do all of Gomer's bookings.
Yeah, in theory.
Why would it not work? I mean, if you don't want to have to expose like your like marital discourse to 5,000 people, literally, far be it from me.
I thought you were going to say your marital debt. I'll expose that all day long. No,
it's twice on Sundays.
It has nothing. I wish. To do with
in my 20s when I was able to nap,
yeah,
and have a Gatorade,
yeah, some vitamin C,
maybe a cigarette.
never.
I almost made a joke, but I did not.
Good. Can I finish a damn sentence?
Shut up. I've been in. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. I'm hamming it up a bit. I will stop.
No, I love it. So, anywho, the whole point is, I about 3 days ago, I said, Shannon, I want to talk to you about something. It was our morning coffee. And I said, babe, I love you. And I love like working with you. And I've asked you this before, but I think it would be good if I just gave you access to my emails or created an email address called like booking at Lay Evangelist. And it just forwarded to your account. And you just said, yes, no, maybe, here's the dates. Here's the things he needs. And I said, I really do think the Excel spreadsheet that I labored over, and for everything for tax purposes, I've been like, okay, well, actually, I need this, and I need this, and I need this. And I now demand that people pay me on two different checks, a reimbursement check versus a tax or a stipend amount, because people put it all in one thing. And then when they file for the IRS for my 1099, mm-hmm. they say I made $450 more than I did. And it's like, damn it, no, I did not. So, anywho.
Or you should just charge more and buy your own ticket.
Sometimes that works really, really well. And sometimes it doesn't. So
That's fair.
Because there sometimes people want me to fly into regional airports, which doubles the price. And obviously I could just factor that in, but and sometimes I'm feeling charitable and I use a voucher to fly to a place that can't afford it. So,
and I don't think you want to really, that's what, I mean, you have, you take an attitude like that on, I will say on a multitude of different things is I think what helps kind of keep it more just that much more of a ministry toward, you know, within that tension. Right.
Right. So I talked to her about that and I think it would be great The one thing, there's no objection to me having her do it other than she's already homeschooling all the kids. She actually just took a job at our homeschool co-op. She was the interim president or principal last semester while the principal had a kiddo. And so she ran it basically from like October till December. And then she was like, oh, this is great. And then they said, she needs an assistant. And so Shannon agreed to do it for like 4 or 8 hours a week, something like that. So it's minimal. But all the administrative stuff to do with homeschooling, some people think like, there are some people who have like a very negative view of homeschooling who don't do it. And they say things mm-hmm. like, hey, can I drop my kids off there? You're not really doing anything today.
That's frustrating.
Right. It's not just frustrating. It's like, it like undermines the amount of sheer work that Shannon does.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't do. It's all her, you know, I do some stuff and that poorly. She does all the things and really well. So I don't want to add to her burden. Now, that being said, my iPhone has 6 different calendars on it that I manage. And so if she comes up with a family event, it goes on her shared family calendar. So I never book some. And I have now gotten her to be fanatical on the electronic calendar. If it's not in the electronic calendar, it doesn't exist in my world. And so, yeah, so it's stuff like that. But I'm pretty sure that she put it on a shared calendar. I just haven't gone through it and looked to confirm that I didn't, but I'm pretty sure she did. So, but yeah, that's why. And so it's me trying to protect her time because yeah. she deserves a damn break.
That's fair.
Especially my kids who have learning issues and all of these things. Sure. We had a friend who's a public school teacher for 31 years. And she said, the way you homeschool Thomas, I'm going to share this before. She's like, it brings tear to my eyes because you would have to fight for everything that's just natural for him in accommodations at a school.
I love Shannon. And,
right. And so like, I mean, like my kids do their homework, like my ADHD kids always seem to be doing their work on the floor, you know, in bed. Okay. You know, I try to do like, hey, let's start at a table. Let's make it yeah. feel like school, like do the mental switch. But and they'll do it, but then they're just like, I just want to lay on the floor. Dude, it's like, cool.
There's actually I actually like to do, I don't know if you remember this or not, but I like to do work lying down on the floor too.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
And yeah, you were always doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, talking with a person in my cohort during grad school. We were up in this one room. I'm like, I stopped at, all right, it's going to be a little bit weird, but I'm going to lie on the floor and work because that's just, I kind of like doing that. And this one person there, she's got a couple kids who have ADHD or like on the spectrum. And she goes, actually, like, that's like an ADHD thing. And I was like, oh, funny story. And because like there's a thing about like it's somehow on your chest, like the pressure does a thing with your brain, and it like, so oh, I'm like, yeah, cool. I would say I'd like, yep, yeah, you want to, you know, I can't do it all day long, but if I'm working at home after a while, I prefer to be on the like lying down on the floor. Is that weird?
No, and I think of that Weezer song, lying on the floor, lying on the floor, I've come undone. Yeah, you get it.
Great. Wonderful.
Yeah. So anywho, I love having Shannon do all the things that she does, and I don't want to interrupt it. And so far,
that's fair.
The admin stuff that she's doing as like a little part-time job
yeah.
is so easy because she's already taking the kids to the Campion Hall school in the morning.
Yeah.
So now she just stays there for 3 hours, 3.5 hours. Yesterday, for instance, on Thursday was the feast day of St. Perpetua, Felicity and Perpetua, and one of the last child that we had, the miscarriage, is Perpetua. And so Shannon was able to go to mass with all of our kids. And my two boys were like, can I sit with you during mass for St. Perpetua and stuff? So it was very
Aww.
Important for Shannon to have that stuff. And
yeah.
And
yeah.
to be free. So I don't ever want to yoke her down to like, okay, we have to do 4 hours because Uncle That's Gomer fair. Doesn't know how to do a schedule.
Yeah. Can I make an argument in favor of her doing that?
Please do.
So, and I'm only going to do it to be a little bit of a devil's advocate, because I think that makes a lot of sense. If you want to go with that, I think that's completely fine. One of the things I think that I was actually talking about this with a person the other day that I think on the podcast doesn't really ever get discussed, or I don't really, and there's no reason why it would, but it's actually like how good of friends I am with Shannon. Like, I don't know. I mean, you could be wrong. sorry, I mean, I could be wrong, but like,
oh yeah, no, I don't think I get people what you're saying.
Like
absolutely.
Understand yeah. that like I actually have like a pretty great friendship with her too, and then like you're both, I mean, we're obviously like better friends if I had to choose, but like,
yeah,
I was very good friends with her before you guys started to date. I mean, I was with yeah. you in your room when you were having the whole conversation about like, do I like her or not?
Yeah.
Back in college.
And I think of it as like you and like Father David is similar. It's like you have an independent friendship of with Shannon that I'm
yes.
Oh,
yes.
like in the orbit of, but it's not only through me.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like, so like when we, so like when I go, like, this has actually happened like almost every time I've gone to your house since we've been doing the podcast, I will almost get like 2 hours alone with Shannon by myself. And we just talk about like what's going on with like her family, what's going on, like, you know, about my life. And it's really honestly, for the most part, it is more about what's going on in her life. And we just drink and like hang out. Cause that's what we used to do during college, was like drink together all the time. And so it's funny because like my memories of Shannon from college in our 20s is not this like super driven, organized individual. It's like my drinking buddy.
<That's>, yeah.
That's like, but I can also like, I can remember, cause I mean, you know, again, like, no, I was never around, like you were around her when she was, you guys were doing your RA stuff. And I was never, you know, I was just there like to drink and hit on freshmen. Right. So,
you get older, they stay the same age. It's beautiful.
I'll never forget, like, I mean, like, I made fun of Shannon one time during at Franciscan, he's this thing called orientation, like every school does. And there's yeah, like,
about to say, somewhat common. Yeah, go
yeah.
on.
And there's like an entertainment thing and stuff. And I was doing that. And it's fun of like, you know, so you have like 500, you know, people there. And I'm on stage and I make fun of Shannon. And so all the Tommy Moore people boo me. You're like 100 girls going boo, and Shannon just laughs and goes, "I love Luke Carey." Laugh like that. It's so funny. But can't remember if you had dumped her or not by that point in time. But anyways,
probably.
I bring this up one because I love to talk about. Oh, I love to talk about Shannon. But two, like if she's really good, like listen, like. You can get at it, like you can with, you know, let's presume that you have ADHD. Okay. You can get by, but it's never going to like the, what you just said, because like, I don't know how to do it. Like you do know how to do it. Your brain has like a dysfunction to where it's not going to work as easy for you as it would for a person who doesn't have it.
Right.
That.
Right.
So it's not a matter of like, you know what to do. Like you actually have to like account for that. And that's actually not the easiest thing in the world. And so if she's good at that, why would you not? Because that's playing into her skill set. Would like, she likes to do what she is good at. Now, I completely understand the thing about like her time, what she's doing stuff at the school. She likes being able to, you know, to be there. If the trade-off is you've got to manage that stuff. Okay. Then that's totally fine. But I don't think it's a problem that it may be better for her to manage this stuff, because this is why bands have tour like managers and why they have like publicists, because most creatives are terrible at all of the logistical things, and they pay people so they don't have to do it.
Right.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with you being like, this is just not a thing that you know what to do. You can do it if it's in a crunch or if there's, you know, if there's pressure on you. But if it's a boring September afternoon, it's just not going to be the thing that gives you life that you're just naturally going to do well.
Right.
You're just not.
You know, and the great thing about that is, like, I recognize that 100%. Part of it is, okay, so, like, being honest and kind of evaluating, why don't I do this stuff? Like, turn it over to Shannon or turn it over or hire someone even. One is because right now money is tight and I want, and so that's a thing. So I can't hire someone out really.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's
fair. Two, I think there's an element of, you know, like owners of small businesses do this where they actually hold their businesses back even dramatically because they're afraid of letting components go.
Mm-hmm. I totally, you know, get like, that. Yep.
Yeah. So, and it's this one guy in the roofing industry, his name's Dmitry Lipinski, the guy that beat up the other guy. He made the comment, he says, if I were starting a roofing business today, what would I do differently? He said the most important thing is hire my second person, you know, employ the second person. So I'm the first employee. Who's the second employee? And he said, and I would hire that person. And he said, an administrative person immediately. And he said, I waited way too long. I was the owner who wanted to do everything, including the things I'm not good at. And so that's very real of, and I didn't really realize that until like I was doing that thing. Cause I talked to my friends who own small businesses and I'm like, you need to hire. And they're like, yeah, I don't know. I think we can still do it. And it's like, I know you can still do it, but you're doing everything at 50%. Wouldn't it be great if you did the things you're really good at 100% and the people that you hired who do that at 100% could do that. You would actually not just do 200%. You would do like 500%. Like that's what happens when you, so I just now realize that that's exactly what I'm doing. If Lay Evangelist is my small business, which it is, I'm holding it back by intentionally not giving up the things I'm bad at. Mm-hmm. And then I think the third thing is my arrogance and pride. I don't want to admit when I'm bad at something. So I resist. And I think that's why it's like, when you say like, you suck at that, don't do that. Why haven't you let Shannon do it? There was like this little twinge in my pride. And I'm like, I can do, it's a calendar. I can do it. And it's like, well, it's not a calendar. It's the 10 emails back and forth to confirm dates. It's the creation of the creation of contracts that have the correct dates in it. It's then the submitting all of these things to the chancery office, who then has to write a letter and then submit the approval. It's also getting my background check information, getting the W-9 in place. And it's like, there's actually 20 steps that can be taken care of by a person who thinks of that stuff incredibly easy. But for me, it's always like the answer to the third email. Oh crap, I haven't sent them my W-9, or they haven't submitted their reimbursement. I need to email them. And it's like, Shannon would just daydream her way into this. And me, it's like, it's always an uphill battle. Whenever someone complains about me and what I do through Lay Evangelist, it has nothing to do with my talks. It has nothing to do with my presence. It has nothing to do with me being a diva or anything. I'm the anti-diva when I'm with people. It has everything to do with like, hey, you know, it did take me 5 emails for you to finally get me the contract and the dates. And I'm like, yep.
So, and that's not like, you know, it's weird, right? Because there's this, we live in this world that it's just like, you're expected to be able to do all things for all people, right?
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I think some people are like, well, I can do this, why can't you? It's like, well, because you're really good at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, there's other things that like we do that like, you're not really good at, you know, and like, you're very good at public speaking. You're very good at being able to take very, I would say, incredibly complex or deep ideas and present them in a way that makes sense to people who are interested in that topic, who would never take the time to peruse the 5 books they would need to come up with the idea that you are talking about. You're able to almost synthesize. Did I say that?
Synthesize
things incredibly well, like incredibly. That's like one of your like hidden powers, right? Like,
yeah. And I didn't realize that until about a year ago, but yeah.
Yeah. You're very, very like, I'm able to kind of like find like the deeper ideas kind of behind all these things and then speak to that. But like, I'm not able to pull them all together and present them in a way that kind of speaks to all of them. Like you can. And there's just not, I don't know. Like I'm kind of becoming like increasingly like, just like, hey, like, you know, and listen, there's always things that you've got to do that you don't want to do that. Like you suck at that. Perhaps your brain even has like deficiency in there. Like I gotta, like, that's just life.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But if you don't have to, it's not a big deal.
Right.
Like it's not a character flaw. Like I just, there's this weird kind of thing we have sometimes as a culture where it's like, you're expected to be the A student who gets A's in every subject. Well, like, here's the deal, everyone. They actually don't know everything about everything. They're just a very good student, which is different than knowing everything about everything.
When I was an A student, people would say, how did you get an A in this class? It was so hard. And I said, well, you know, I did the homework. I did the things. I participate. And I said, but there's a game called academia. And if you learn how to play the game with that professor, they're like, well, what do you mean? It's like, well, okay. So, for instance, at Franciscan University, there are multiple philosophy professors, some of whom really do not like St. Thomas Aquinas. They don't reference him once. They kind of roll their eyes when people, and some of them are Thomists.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, the whole thing, whether or not they're, you know, teaching Thomism they are referencing it, right? It's always their field of reference. And so you would have certain people who it's like, yeah, no, like just you have to write your paper. You get to pick any topic. Write on the topic that the professor already loves, has made side comments on. Like there are so many ways that, and some people just kick against the goads. Like they can't just own it and be like, oh yes, this professor doesn't like St. Thomas, so I'm going to go on a crusade to prove him wrong. It's like, number one, you're a freshman. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. Or even if you're a senior, you're not, you don't have a doctorate. Like, why don't you
settle down?
You've
got a podcast called The Crunch.
You know, Jack. Yeah. But it's just funny. And so you're right. Like, there are some people who can excel in academia, not necessarily because they have mastered the content, but because they've mastered the course framework. And I will say, it does. So when I grew up, this is part of like, man, this is like my therapy session. A phrase that I hear in my head from someone in my life that's an authority figure saying, oh, you can do all of this stuff, but you can't do this little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I think that's like a hook in my brain
yep.
that pulls yep. me back in. But it's funny that you bring this up because literally 3 days ago or 4 days ago, what is today? Today's Friday. I think it was on Monday or Tuesday. I said to my wife, I want you to start managing my dates so that I don't let these little things fall through the cracks. And I can train you on all the stuff that I need to have and do. But and my wife actually has a better relationship with the ordinariate chancellor than I do. I had a wonderful conversation with her a couple of weeks ago where she's like, please send them all to me. Don't send them to your parish. Send them all to me. I literally do 100 a week. So I was like, oh, okay. So 101 is not that big a deal. So there's a woman that I used to have on my team back when I had employees. You remember that, Luke? And
talked about it. Nauseam.
Okay. But her name, yeah, I did. Her name's Jennifer. And I probably talked about her as one of the main things. She loves taking administrative type work away from people so that they can do the thing that they're good at. She loves it. And she was a part of a group, a company before she came to work for the church, where the guy had read some business book and it was about, you know, getting your employees to always be like high achievers. And the philosophy was push them into roles that maybe they don't feel comfortable in so that they grow and stretch them and all this stuff. And she came to him and said, don't do that. I'm an admin. I love being an admin. Nothing brings me more joy to take work away from people that they're not so that they can go do the thing that they're great at because I'm great at admin. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, no, I think it's better. And he promoted her and made her a manager over people. And, you know, it came with a raise. It came with this. And she goes, okay, I quit. You're not listening. And I can't help. This is where I'm not helpful, where I'm just, this is not my zone. And then she came on board. She would say, I can talk in front of people. If you need me to talk in front of the parents to tell them what's what, yes. She's like, but Mike, you're the speaker. So if I can do all of the background organizing, so all you have to do is walk out, grab a microphone, deliver your thing, and then walk off. She's like, I have done my job and I love it. And I think about that from time to time, like, the object is not ladder climbing, but finding that lifestyle fulfillment where you just work. And it's like ADHD is a detriment in certain areas, but it's also a huge blessing in other mm-hmm. areas.
Yeah.
I literally heard a podcast the other day where they called ADHD the entrepreneurial mind because you have to focus on so many things to get a project launched, like a business launched. You're unsatisfied with the status quo and like all of these things. And I was like, yeah, ADHD people tend to be more change oriented. They're not adverse to change as many other people are. But just sitting there and I'm like, yeah, you know, I need to be better at that. I'm advocating for that for the roofing company, but I'm not advocating for layevangelist.com. So dumb.
It is. And I think you'd probably find that you probably will, you know, like, I don't know if you would make more money, but I think you probably would in the long run. Yeah. You might find that there's one or two things that are slipping through the cracks, things that you aren't able to respond to or whatever, or perhaps you're going to be in a point where you're going to be able to choose as yeah. opposed to just like, let me just like fill.
Yep.
You know, but like also I understand that like Shannon, you know, you want to respond yeah. all that stuff. That makes total sense. I just think like, again, I'm being a little bit of the devil's advocate here, but like, I don't know. There's, you know, when going to a public school, and it's probably, I don't know if this is true in Catholic schools or not at this point in time, but I remember around like fifth grade is the time that you start to be told, like, you need to be mature. Here's your plan, or you need to do this. And like that stuff is great. And there's an element of planning that you need to be able to do. But like, there was still kind of the age of where like everyone was treated the same, like it was a conveyor belt. It's really the, you know, kind of the right. tail end of that. And schools are much different now.
Yeah.
But people just aren't the same, you know, like I go through probably five or six, like, you know, I don't have one thing where I keep everything. I have one thing where I keep everything right now. And then I will eventually just like go to something else. Cause I have to, you know, and that's not the end of the world. It's like,
it's not,
as long as stuff isn't falling through the cracks, which for the most part, it's not, like, it's just not going to happen. You know, I'm not going to use Trello for years. I'm going to use Trello for 5 months. And then I'm going to go to my journal again, and then vice versa. And then I'll be into, you know, and for a week I'll, you know, do OmniFocus and be like, you know, and just like,
this is too much. I'm out. Maybe I'll try things three. Oh, nope. I lost my subscription. Okay. I'm out.
This seems very cool in 2010.
back during the reign of Merlin Man. Yeah.
Remember that? Yeah. Oh God. What a time to be alive. And so we've got some 10 minute topics here that we can get to, but I would just really encourage you to like, just, you know, I don't know. You're not a shitty person because you're not good at that. That's okay. You know, like, I don't know, like.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think your point's well made.
Yeah. No, let me keep beating this horse. This dead horse.
Instead, let's talk about the Steubenville conferences. What do you think?
I think we're a great group of people to talk about this because I think they're one of the most important things in the world that a Catholic can be a part of, particularly if you have a kid who's in high school or you yourself are in high school. I love them. I truly do. Like, I get emotional whenever I am think about them. There's a direct line from this podcast to the conferences. It's probably, for me, top five most important things to ever happen to me in my life.
Yeah. And that includes the birth of all of my kids and getting married to Shannon. Conferences are more important than all of that. And it's beautiful.
It's true. You wouldn't, would you have met me? You applied like for school 3 weeks before, like, you know, we started because of a conference.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's so funny. It's so funny. So if you're thinking about going to the Steubenville Youth Conferences, the main thing is go to steubenvilleconferences.com. Find the nearest youth conference to you. If you want, I'm going to be at Steubenville Main Campus too, and I'm going to be at Steubenville Rochester as a speaker. But go, if you're an adult and you have kids, go get your church to go, volunteer to be a chaperone. It feeds adults. We would have chaperones. Like, Steubenville has to, like, this is how good the conferences are. They have to mandate a ratio, not just for safe environment, but because too many adults want to go and be chaperones so that they can be fed. Then they're taking up spots from the kids. So it's like, it's like 10-1 for safe environment. And it's like 8-1, like, Steubenville conference. Cause it's like, stop, chaperones. You got to leave room for the kids. So there is a lot of good stuff. They're not just confession and the liturgies and all that stuff, but in particular, how powerful it is for Catholics who might feel isolated to walk into an arena filled with 3,000 other Catholics, their age, their life, their background. You know, it's a potent weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you are on the fence about it, this is your sign. You need to go to steubenvilleconferences.com. That is steubenvilleconferences.com. Sign up for a conference today. It is incredibly worth it. I truly, my life has changed because my parents and their friends decided to take a you know, that like a bunch of us should go. I went to my first Steubenville conference with my buddy Dan Hess. Now he's like, I'm Father Dan Hess in the Archdiocese here, and like, I'm the Cincinnati. I went with like Sean Ader, who was my boss at the Archdiocese, who we had on the podcast a long time ago. Like, I sat right by them on Friday night when Bob Rice tried to convince people to give their life over to Christ. Bob Rice or Bob Shrimp? Bob Rice did the music. Bob Lesneski was the character, and Bob Shrimp was the host.
And, a tale, you know, of three Bobs.
Exactly. That was when I learned to behold the Lamb. And I made that joke, and it was when we had Bob Rice on. It was amazing. And I don't know. Like, I cannot tell you, like, you know, out of those three people there at one point in time, we were all doing pretty profound things in the Archdiocese. You know, that's the power of these things from just one group that was there over the summer of 1997. So, and I want to do a little bit of a contest, a little bit of a contest. Are you ready? I'm pretty pumped about this. Okay, so if you go to steubenvilleconferences.com, and if you go to one of the summer conferences at the Franciscan campus in Steubenville, Ohio, and you're in the field house, I believe, I don't know if they're still there, they have a bunch of plaques in there from all the intramural champions. If you go to the AA men's football team, there will be a team name on that plaque that you will instantly recognize. Actually, there will be two team names, one on the A team, which is the Bayside Tigers. Okay. And the other, which is, I'm more proud of that one. That was the best. You missed that. The best of a football game of my life. And we won. 23 seconds left, down by 10. We came back and we won. Okay. Anyways. So I want you to get a picture of that, the Bayside Tigers, and then there's going to be a team on the AA team that won in the men's intramural flag football. You will instantly recognize this team name. If you're not a patron, you're going to have to join. But if you are, post a picture of that in the Discord over the summer of both team names. The first person to do that will get a half hour chat with us on Zoom.
Nice.
So all you've got to do is go to the Steubenville conferences on campus over the summer, get a picture of both team names. There's the Bayside Tigers for the A men's team. There's a team name that you will instantly recognize for the AA team that won the championship around 2005, I believe. Post that in the Discord. The first person to post both pictures that we don't know, okay, that we don't know, will or that we didn't go to college with, will get a half hour chat with us on Zoom. How does that sound, Gomer?
That sounds like well thought out, meticulous rules for entry. Void where prohibited. Please
sorry, consult Tennessee. Your
state lottery office. Yeah, sorry, Tennessee. And the freak states, Alaska and Hawaii. So, yeah, that'll be great. Thanks to the Steubenville Conference Office for supporting episode of Catching Fox.
We love you guys.
All right, Luke. I think we're going to have to do like maybe 5-minute topics, 7-minute topics.
Why don't we do like a, let's just do like a speed round.
Beautiful.
All right. Advice on negotiating with car insurance. Good luck.
On negotiating with car insurance in terms of meaning like I need to buy new car insurance? I
don't know. They didn't really go into detail. I apologize.
Okay. Well, let me give you two bits of advice. Number one.
One bit. We're pressed for time.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Go to one of those places that like LendingTree for home mortgages that does that. Don't try to do it yourself. There's a lot of shady crap in the insurance industry. Maybe ask your parents who's a long-term agent that they know. I would almost tell you, go to an independent insurance company, not one of these
big name ones. I wonder if it's cheaper. Yeah. I would also say, see if you could bundle it with your home insurance if you added that, you know.
Yeah. We use Costco, and it's like, oh, they use Ameriprise and blah, blah, blah. And they just jacked up our rates, even though I haven't filed a claim ever. And I don't have any dings on my license. I don't travel because I work from home. So, and my wife drives me to the airport every day or every time. So it's bizarre how much it increased. And it's like, oh yeah, because you're just a nameless, soulless corporation that doesn't care about me. Whereas so-and-so who lives in the area and owns
their own.
Yeah. So also Allstate, you should just avoid them.
Best Batman. We're not an insurance place. So we should not. This is just for entertainment purposes only. Gomer, best Batman.
Best Batman movie?
Best Batman. So let's presume they mean the actor or the voice actor. You can even do comic book run if you so choose.
Oh, the best voice actor would have to be, what's his name, Kane from...
I mean, it's just the Kevin Conroy guy from the animated series, obviously.
Yeah. Absolutely. His voice is perfect.
I think
I loved him as Batman. Bruce Wayne and as Batman.
Yeah, he be the best Batman. Yeah. I still got to give it to Christian Bale because I just adore those films, but I kind of think Robert Pattinson I kind of like Val Kilmer too. Don't kill me. It's because I love that movie so much.
Michael Keaton was good as weird Bruce Wayne.
I know. Like, yeah, agree. And Bruce Wayne in that universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man. So we didn't give a good answer, but I'm going with Conway.
I think, okay, so to not pick that, I'm going to go, okay, this is going to kind of contradict everything, but I think I might go with Michael Keaton just because in my brain, that's it. That's Batman.
Yeah.
That's just Batman to me. I saw it when I was five with my buddy, Billy Hoekstead, and with his parents at a drive-in in 1989. can AI make sacred art? I say no. What do you say?
Yes.
My argument for no is that any art that is like sacred has to have an element of prayer while it's either being created or performed. And AI makes that impossible.
So while I don't disagree with you, with that, because like when you make an icon, they call it writing an icon.
Yeah.
And you are praying the whole time and, you know, all that stuff. Michelangelo bronzed his rosary that he prayed every day into the Baltichino over the altar at St. Peter's Basilica. Like beautiful things like that. Agreed. But if you're talking about can AI scan 900,000 icons, identify common themes, and then replicate several of them with an iconographic style or an oil painting style, then the answer is yes. I was using Canva, and I had it do, I said, I want an oil painting of a Texas ranch house that's old with solar panels on the roof. And it was and it produced some really bizarre artifacts, but it produced, I would say, 10 graphics that you thought were 100% oil painting, legit, almost photorealistic, like amazing. Yeah,
but the difference between that though, I've always kind of felt this way, and I went to a talk one time where a person confirmed that, and I was like, okay, I feel really justified now. And I don't remember any of the main points, but that when it comes to sacred art, there's something about when it's not just this art that's inspiring you, but it's a prayer you're being invited into and participating in. So it's really sacramental. It's actually a thing that you are participating in.
Yeah.
That it actually exists in and of itself, and AI cannot inherently do that.
So philosophically,
you're right about like that image. So this is why I would say I would classify like Me Without You as being like sacred art, because I think one is it is incredible, and that's kind of part of it. It has to be very good, obviously, and I think it is very good. But it is such an earnest prayer. Every song, even though really weird ones, are an earnest prayer, an earnest desire for God that can't, like it, and it is the beauty that does like stir in your heart, that does speak to your heart, but it's also that like desire for God that speaks to your heart, and it's when it is like the true and the it's sorry it is the true and the good. So it is, there's this true like earnest element for the Lord being combined with good art. That's what makes it that's what makes it beautiful, which is ultimately what makes it sacred.
So a buddy of mine was in Rome at an art presentation by the statue carvers that have their office right there in the colonnade, right? In those like buildings that flank the colonnade. And it was this beautiful depiction of Saint Joseph. It's like a 12-foot tall statue, and he was describing the process and all this stuff. And guy raises his hand, my buddy, and he says, so what's going through your mind? Like, are you praying, and what scripture verses are you using while you're doing this? What inspires you? And the artist just started laughing, and he goes, what are you talking about? I'm an atheist. All of us are. He's like, I don't know a single religious person, let alone a devout Roman Catholic, that works at the sacred art place. So it's like this main thing of like the owners might be, but like this main mm-hmm. distribution, a lot of it is, let's just say, skill over devotion.
Yeah.
And when I think about AI as just producing a product, like an end result, because I had it make photorealistic 3D images of Mary and the Madonna and child with Saint Joseph, you know, whatever. And it looked like a photorealistic thing of statues and stuff. So while, I mean, again, philosophically, theologically, I agree that there's no prayer, there's no meditation, you're not being invited into that. I'm just saying in pixel to pixel, the one argument that someone asked Jordan Peterson from back when he was doing the Genesis thing, they said, if a computer can pixel for pixel replicate a masterpiece work of art, how is that functionally any different? And what I loved, and this might be the answer, is Jordan Peterson said, he goes, I would say it's not the same thing because there's something about time, an element of time of layering oil on canvas and doing this stuff, that it is bound in by time, whereas for the AI, it's an instant, you know, near instantaneous creation that has nothing to do with a creature living in time in order to produce this.
That's interesting.
Right? And I thought, I was like, oh, dang. So it's not just like, yeah, but the, you know, the robot doesn't care. The scanner doesn't, you know, whatever. And it's like, okay, but there's also this other element, the whole other dimension of not just space, but time. So,
well, and I would add to, just to your point on the theology, Celtic philosophy, like that's reality though.
True.
You know, and this stuff isn't.
I don't know. I think I'm becoming more of a materialist the more I get into roofing.
once you're going after that money.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your favorite breakfast, Gomer?
The weirdest breakfast. I used to hate this, and now it's my favorite. Steak and eggs.
Ooh, nice. Okay, so for me, it is right now. I am trying to do. I'm not doing Athletic Greens because they did not continue the sponsorship way back when. I don't remember why. It was. Do you remember we got free Athletic Greens? That was great.
Yeah, that was when we were with Par, and when we left Par, they said we loved your ad reads. We think you guys are great. We'd love to keep going, and then they never responded.
We
I think because we kept calling it Athletic. Yeah, no, they never responded to us being like, yes, I'd love to work with you. I think also we keep calling it Athletic Greens, and it's called AG1.
Yeah, whenever I was like, this is great.
Athletic Greens! I love that ad. Read the print.
It was so, I remember being like, this is amazing. This is how much? For free? And we're getting paid? This is incredible. Okay, so but I actually, I asked ChatGPT to tell me, like, okay, if I wanted to get like the, you know, like the good stuff of Athletic Greens, what could I do? And so I use spinach, kale, blueberries, banana, avocados, and then some fiber seeds and some almonds. I forget what the fiber seeds are, and it's pretty great. And I like that. I always like a little bit of bread, a little bit of butter, some jelly if I'm feeling very, very fancy, and some eggs. And coffee, but I'm not drinking coffee in the morning right now. Can a newly married wife ask her husband to make an effort to get in shape and avoid becoming obese if he is currently not fat but not really actively trying to be fit? Sure.
Yeah. I mean, why can't you ask that?
Yeah.
Is it like you can still love the person if they're obese and all of that stuff, but that doesn't mean you don't want their health to be a priority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, are you saying you're nervous about this because it's more so about how they look to you and they're, you know, I mean, the reality is it's a big component of our life, and we need to take care of our health. And we also, I would say to this person writing this, I think husband and wives can ask that of each other. I think also husbands and wives need to take into account the reality and the difficulty of someone who maybe they have obesity in their family and it's really difficult. Maybe they struggle with eating disorders. You know, maybe it's the other direction and you have people who starve themselves or who have a very horrible reaction to food. And you're like, oh, you should gain weight or you're so skinny. Like all of that stuff is tread lightly.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there are some people who actually can't lose weight no matter how much they try.
Yeah.
It's very, 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 very difficult. And that's just people's bodies are weird.
Yeah. And, but I would say that we do, like, I mean, your body is not your own. And if your spouse is abusing their body, you have a right to, you have a duty, a bounden duty to call them to holiness. But also that doesn't mean I want to be married to a physically fit hot guy who doesn't get dad bod. Like that's weird. And that's more about your vanity than it is about loving that person. So it takes your discernment of your own motives there. But I think we're so scared to say this stuff in relationships, but this stuff matters because our bodies matter. And taking care of your body means you're also going to be able to take care of me and I and vice versa. Yeah, this stuff, and it's hard to make it a priority if you're slipping. But I will also say this, oftentimes men, especially in the beginnings of marriage, there's a relief that you know, this might sound rude, but you've bagged the game. The hunt is over. Like, there's like an exhaustion level that is now you could like, oh, thank God I don't have to do all that stuff anymore. And in one sense, that's good because I love you. I'm going to gain 10 pounds. I have the woman of my dreams. But in another sense, it's like, and I'm also letting go of some of the romance and stuff. So as men, we need to not fall into that passivity. Like, it's easy to be romantic when you're not married. It's hard to be romantic when you are married. You still need to make the effort. And so that involves this too.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I am with you on that. One of the things on here, sorry, going to the next one, how to get started in this person has three questions. One is personal, how to get started in Catholic media. This is what we did. We actually worked hard on creating an idea that for a thing that did not exist that we thought would be good. We mapped out. I think it's important to really really flesh out what you want to do and ask yourself, do people really want to hear this? Or do people really want to enjoy this? Is this a thing that people like, do I just want to be heard? Or is this a thing that people are actually going to want to hear? What is unique? What is special about this? And then also we gave ourselves a lot of time to like find our voice, to find our thing, to like really screw up and to fail. But we were very, I would almost say not brutal, but like pretty way more intense than we are right now about trying to like, this wasn't it. Like trying to find that thing and being like, how could we always asking the question, how could we do this better? And then promoting it, I would say I was very selfish and I just asked everyone to like our Facebook page. I think it was Arlene Spencer who told us about like this thing you could basically add people on like very quickly on different types like social media, on Instagram and on Twitter. And I did that. Like I just hoard ourselves out like crazy. And what really helped us was when Catholic Stuff talked about us. Granted, I was friends with fellow Michael on like Facebook. That's how he heard about it. That's how he heard us. I put it out there, and then you knew Matt Frad. That's how he heard about it. And that's, you know, so just try to get it out there to people.
There's a wonderful book called $100 million Leads. And Alex Ramosi breaks down.
This is so where you are right now.
I know. It really is.
Oh my God. You are so on brand right now. This is just what he's obsessed with. We got real into sales for like a month. And so we were talking about it on the phone and stuff and trading ideas.
So good. So he breaks it down. He breaks it down into four categories. You got warm leads, cold leads. You got one-on-ones and one to many. Right. So if you think about how do you step into Catholic media, number one, what are you doing? What is Catholic media? That's such a nebulous term that as long as you keep it nebulous, you're never going to do anything. So come up with a thing. I'm going to do a podcast. I'm going to do a show. I'm going to make a Twitter video because there's not a lot of people doing Twitter videos. And I'm going to make an Instagram.
Yeah. And I'm going to add like, who is this for? Right. Like I'm going to just go back to us because it's us. We distinctly we're making a podcast for people like us who were going to be okay with people cursing, going to be okay with people, things are going to be long, and we're going to be okay with all of the culture stuff.
And sometimes I'll also tell you this, when you're growing your brand, you or your thing, you don't even always understand the market that you're going for, and things evolve and you need to be attentive to that evolution. Mm-hmm. And it's very important as you grow, you actually, and this is part of that I tried to get across to my daughter, which is, you grow your voice only in interacting with other voices, right? And you have a public voice that is going to be different from your private voice. And the goal of being you is not trying to like unite these two, right? I think to a certain extent, me and you, we're truthful and we're honest because this is who we are. And that the public and the private are they overlap a lot. You don't have to have them overlap a lot, but you can be authentically you in a public sphere that's different than authentically you in a private sphere. So I just want to say, banish all of that like inauthenticity, negative self-talk. That's stupid. The other thing is, so the social element of it helps you to find your voice because the things you gravitate to, the things that repulse you, those are the things that develop your voice and you need it to be developed. It's just like your physical voice. You only get it by being in dialogue with other people and, you know, singing, like choruses, all that stuff just makes your voice stronger. So then lastly, what I would say is if you pick your medium, you pick your audience, you try to develop your voice, you're delivering consistently. My one thing is, why does it have to be Catholic media? Yes, there are riches in the niches, but it doesn't have to be. But number two, if it does have to be, then hit as many warm leads as possible. Invite freaking everybody that you know into this thing and invite them in all the channels that you already have. If you have 200 people who follow you on Facebook and they're your family and friends, invite them. Hey, I did this thing. Hey, I did this thing. I would say for the first year, I posted every single episode, not just in Catching Fox's Facebook page, but then I would share that page on my own personal page.
Yeah.
And I would tag people in it who I thought would benefit or who I thought would think it's funny. And that helped to explode our audience, because if I tagged John and Beth Drizaldi and they both found it funny and they would share it, usually Beth would share it, all of a sudden her audience then, you know, made it like, oh, okay. And so I'm like, I'm a big fan of just doing that. Like, don't hold back from your warm leads. Like, blast it out to the many and to individuals. And you can give feedback.
Yeah, I think a lot of our success, and I'm using us, which is probably a little bit unfair, but it's the most I'm Catching Fox's thing ever as well. This was a little bit of luck, but like not really, but also kind of, that we had a medium that, and we were, and it was, we, and like really viewed it in a way that was perfect at that point in time. So when you talk about building out, you know, you like network every other episode, we were, you know, once we had our lean on, we were about seven or so episodes in. I would say it's probably not every other one, but it's close to it. We tried to have a guest on, and we had our friends' wives on. We had our friends on. We had friends to talk about things we thought would be, you know, like it was open on the season. And particularly in the beginning for ours, what had more downloads were the ones with like, the ones where we like had like Sarah Nicol on to, you know, to talk about autism or being on the spectrum had just as high, if not more than our shows with Matt Fratt.
Yeah.
Now that's not the same right now because podcasting has just exploded so much. But I think because that was such a unique thing and it was such an interesting episode, people really enjoyed that. But it also like expanded what we were doing because we had tons of different people on. And I think, and there's a little bit of like, we kind of like fell into that is what, but like, that's what the medium also allowed us to do. So really like really think about like, what do you want to do? How can you make it easy and sustainable for yourself as well? We had to do having interviews every other week. There was a sweet spot where we were on fire in terms of topics, but what was great about every other week was like, we didn't have to come up with ideas all the time.
Yeah.
And so, and then I would just add too, like really, you know, what can you realistically do? And understand that like there's a little bit of luck. There just is, you know, like I do think we could probably do this again and it would be pretty big. I don't know if it would be big on the level that it was when we began, which we never really understood when we were at its peak how big it actually was.
Yeah.
But that's not like here nor there, you know. So I'd love to talk about that. That's like I could talk about that ad nauseum. Why is the church so beige? Any idea?
Why is it so beige? So Bishop Barron has a phrase called beige Catholicism. And I think it means like a watered down Catholicism where there's nothing threatening, challenging, dismissive, you know, whatever. And I think the reason, if you were to ask me over beers and, you know, there were no microphones around that could get me in trouble. But here, I'm going to just say that. What I would say is simply this. Catholicism is beige, it's yogurt, it's nothing special, because we thought that it is easier to reach the masses with a message where the bar is lower. That you're not going to push people, you're not going to push the timid away if you mitigate the intensity of your message. And what we have found generation after generation after generation of people hemorrhaging from the church is the church is not really worth being a part of unless it demands something from you and unless it gives you something in your time of greatest need. And so for the broken, there is what St. Paul in 2 Corinthians talks about, to comfort the afflicted, right? And Jesus saying, you know, blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Like, Christianity has been the support when everything else in life has crumbled. You know, people with addictions, people with problems, people with abuse and trauma, and there has been amazing change. That's why so many conversion stories and testimonies are dramatic. But also at the same time, for those of us who grew up in Christianity, I can tell you, you know, I could probably count on one hand how many homilies at a typical mass, a Sunday mass, like truly challenged me to become a better person. And instead, what you get is, well, try to spend 3 to 5 minutes a day. And I get it. Like, you say these things because you don't want to scare away people who aren't fully engaged, but maybe they want to be, whatever it might be, right? I think there is so much that that we just don't do. We don't invite men and women into the adventure that it is to follow Christ. And when you don't, when your goal is comfort, not true happiness, not heroicism, not sanctity, when your goal is comfort, you're okay with mediocrity and you don't need grace or the Holy Spirit at all because you're good. All you need is a bank account in order to be comfortable. And I think that's what Catholicism has been doing. I think that's the tendency of the world, as Archbishop Fulton Sheen said, is to mediocrity. Don't be too good. Don't be too evil. We'll reject you. And that's always been a part of the church. The people who, I mean, Jesus even says, you got four seeds sown in different types of soil. The seed with the thorns is, it's good seed, it's good soil, but the thorns and thistles choke its life. And what are they? The concerns of this world, right? And worldly pleasures and riches. And it's like, once we understand that, then we're like, oh, this is why medieval Catholicism, which was so powerful, was also so defiled, because the thorns and the thistles were just everywhere, even though the soil might have been great. And so in our own lives, like, for me, it's a thing. Like my wife and kids paired up with this other family, the Burmans, and went and did a service project. And they haven't done, like, they do service projects once a month because they want their kids to understand that to be a follower of Christ, it means to serve those in need.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, but I'm a church worker. I don't have time for that. And it's like, eh, well, the poor, they certainly have all the time in the world for you to do that for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with the last, I'd say, half to almost 60% of what you said. The first part I would take issue with was just that I think one of the reasons why they changed those churches was not for the masses, to get the masses interested. That's there a little bit, but it was more about trying to get rid of the mystery of God and emphasize the communal aspect of God. God is not this thing that is like so far away from you. It can be small. It can be intimate. It can be, it's not the walls that make God God, it's God. And so even if we take away everything and have these beige walls, God is still here because it's the community that matters. It's us. It's God. Like, God wants to be involved in our lives. And this other stuff was just a way to express that, but it's not the thing. And that's, I think that was wrong. Like, I also understand why they did that. I don't know if any of us would make a different choice had we been in their shoes back then. Probably not, but like, I like, you know, but like, it was just very, it's hard for us to really understand what things were like before Vatican II.
Yeah. Oh, just for the record, I'm not talking about beige as in drywalled sanctuaries with devoid of sacred art. I'm not talking about the last 70 years. I'm talking about the whole history of the church. Beige Catholicism, meaning there's nothing really grabbing, attention getting, challenging.
Well,
That's all I mean. I'm not referring to Vatican II at all.
I think that is a good point. That is a good point. I was viewing it more as like, why have we gone to this like weird little thing that we've done for the last while here? I do think there's an element though of like, I don't know if it's actually the church that is the reason why we're hemorrhaging people. I think we're hemorrhaging people because of the cultural attitudes that are even pervasive in the church on all ideological sides. That being primarily a culture that is rooted in techne. Like this is roots of like hundreds and hundreds of years. Like I don't know if this great excess of people that we've experienced. And that's not now kind of seeing what you meant. This might not be what you're getting at, but like over the last couple of decades, all the people that we have lost. I don't think if we don't change our churches, change our like liturgy, I think it happens regardless. Might even be worse. And the one thing I do wonder, and I don't know, this could just like be me and like me being a really bad Catholic, is I don't think a week after week of a great homily is actually going to make that much of a difference, because like that sounds emotionally exhausting to have like have 52 homilies a year where I'm like all are going to like change my life. Like that sounds exhausting. Like sometimes I'm okay with just like a very simple homily. Just like, that's just like, keep going. Sounds good. You know, like I don't need everything to be this like heightened, like now I must change. I don't know. And this could also be like where I am in life. Cause I've just like, haven't gone through a lot over the last couple of years. I don't have the bandwidth for like life changing experiences. So certain things to me, like, don't sound as appealing as they once did. I don't know. I'd be curious.
Yeah, so that's what I mean by like that Second Corinthians kind of thing of like, when you are constantly afflicted and, you know, you've had whirlwinds of life change happen to you, what you need to know is there's a rock beneath your feet, beneath the stormy waves, like that Introduction to Christianity story that Cardinal Ratzinger talks about, where mm-hmm. he means, you know, the Jesuit playwright, where the wayward person is on a sinking ship. It's the middle of the night. He's the only survivor, and he's stuck to the mast, and it's sinking beneath the water, and he's going to die. And it's this moment where he's lashed to the cross, the mast being the shape of a cross, and it's sinking. And Ratzinger has this great line where he says, you know, one feels the waves of doubt and the world like crushing you, but you're, as long as you are held to the cross is actually attached to the bedrock of the universe. Right. So it's like, yeah. And it's such a beautiful image. I was listening to a podcast or a YouTube channel, Modern Wisdom, with Chris Williamson, and he was interviewing Eric Weinstein, who just terrifies me with his knowledge. But he made this comment about, I've never met an atheist who doesn't pray. And he's like, and I've never met a believer who is never tempted to atheism. And I'm like, literally, he is coming at it from the atheistic perspective, who still loves the Jewish ritual of Shabbat and all this stuff. And he knows all the songs and he understands these things. He's coming at it from the opposite lens of Cardinal Ratzinger, who says the exact same thing in Introduction to Christianity, meditating on this. So that being said, I agree with you. In fact, I recently wrote a huge like dissertation to a priest friend of mine who is known for what's known as paraklesis in the Greek. It's moral exhortation. You can do better. You can be more. Like, come on, people. And I said, if every single homily you give is always tied to moral exhortation, to this paraklesis, like someone like me can hear that, and I filter it through all the theology I'm reading, all the philosophy, my life experience, and I leave going, that was great. That was so true. That was a great point he made. But other people who day in and day out hear this, they come away saying, I'll never be good enough. It's all my work and I'm failing. This is just like you said, this would be exhausting. And so I was literally telling this guy, you need to calm that side down. Way down. I said, because what ends up happening is, if you're the father figure, then I'm never good enough for you, Dad. And that's what you've made my faith like. And so it becomes a heresy of works righteousness and rigorism. And what usually breaks that is, you know, some sort of deconstruction. And so I said, this is what you should do instead. The next time you give a homily, or the next five times you give a homily, you cannot mention the word should, ought, or must once. You have to delete it, because that's going right into moral exhortation. The only thing you're allowed to do is point at the beauty of the gospel and what unfolds. That's it. Like, you can involve sin and judgment and heaven and hell and all this stuff without turning it into moral exhortation by just, can we not just receive and contemplate the beautiful and the true and the good without saying, so because of this, you need to stop mortal sinning. I was like, just get rid of all that.
You need to stop touching yourself.
Yeah, it always comes down. No, so, but like that thing. And he was like, well, how do I do that? And I was like, get rid of should, must, and ought. And make sure your homilies are not all moral exhortation. Because, yes, I said, no one challenges people more than you. No one does. And the way you challenge is always within the context of Christ's love and his mercy. You have never guilt-tripped people outside of that. Like, yeah. you talk about the love of Christ so much. However, even if you talk about the love of Christ, because the most impact is the challenge, you exhaust people who are fragile.
Yeah. Is this who I think it is?
Yeah. And so can understand, like, he gives all of his homilies are challenging and I love them.
I
told him, I was like, I can handle it. Some people can handle it. Some people, it shuts them down and they think they'll never be good enough. And then in your head, you're thinking, well, you can't be good enough. It's God you're comparing to. But it's like, yeah, but that's because you have all the other frameworks. They don't.
Yeah. And this is why I feel bad for priests, because it's just like, how do you do that? You know, how do you like, you manage something where people are all over the place. I want to get through a couple
more
of these. Yeah. So let's just spend like, I'm not kidding, like 1 minute on the rest. So
okay. Keep this around, I'm staring at the clock.
Why does Gomer hate distributist? Gomer, what say you?
So I don't hate all of it, but it seems to me that distributism, I love the fundamental concept of giving most people most of the land so that they can never be tyrannized by few people with all of the capital. Capitalism and socialism ends up almost with the same result, which is the majority of land in the minority of people's hands. And so by distributing land, you distribute power. Okay, that's one thing. Number two, how do we transition from whatever society we are, socialist, capitalist, whatever, to the distributed society? The only way we do that is by giving all the power to the hands of the state in order to justly distribute it. I don't really see that ever working. I find it to be a pie in the sky. And let's be honest, it was all derived principally through meditating on the economic arrangements of ancient Israel. And ancient Israel, I don't know if you know this, but didn't keep any of their economic arrangements with the Lord. And so if it's hard for them to practice it and they had theophanies, how much harder will it be for us? I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying these are such huge hurdles. Also, I think they have blind spots to the free market economy that are just givens, and they're intentionally blind because they want to be critical. That's all.
Look at that. Okay, so you were just over a little bit of 1 minute. You did it, buddy. Good job.
Oh, thank you.
I'm so proud of you. I did it.
And that was straight off the cuff. That was pretty good.
See, you're good at that kind of crap, man. See? I know. Stop trying to book stuff. Who cares?
Oh, shit. I double booked this time. I got to go.
What's the biggest animal you think you could beat in a fight? Probably a medium-sized dog. Like, if we're being honest here.
Have you almost had to fight a medium-sized dog?
No.
1 week ago, I almost had to.
Who?
It came roaring, barking at me while I was walking. I didn't bring my pepper spray flashlight thing that I have. And I was one step away from kicking it in the face as hard as I could. Because it was snarling at me, running at me. 2 doors down, 3 doors down, the homeowner who had the dog, pet owner, is on her phone staring at it.
I and genuinely goes, hate it when people don't have dogs on a leash. Like, particularly, I'm just like, what? It's, to me, it's like the trashiest thing in the world. This is where, like, my douchey, like, Oakwood side comes out. Like, how white trash are you to be doing? Ridiculous.
Yeah. Ridiculous. So what's the biggest animal? Oh, man. What do you think? A horse-sized chicken or 10 chicken-sized horses?
No, a horse-sized chicken would kill us, and 10
I know.
Chicken, like, we're weak men.
Yeah, that's true.
We're just men. We're just normal men.
I am no God. Yeah, I would say maybe like a sheep. I could take out a sheep. I could beat it.
Do you know how hard a sheep can bite you?
Yeah, no, but if I'm motivated, do I have a hammer? Do I have a weapon?
Okay, let's assume. No, I think a sheep could end up getting the best of you, man.
Okay, teacup poodle.
No, I'm going with teacup poodle. Yeah. Okay, let me. I don't. Yeah.
I like maybe, how serious okay, you're taking this question.
Maybe a sheep. Okay. How to start a men's group out of pairs without being too. Sorry, I'm just sort of again. This is kind of long. So, but we'll keep our answer short. How does it go?
Don't. I know what you're doing.
I know.
You're quoting me without you. That's aren't you.
We keep. we keep our answers all along. But when we pray, we keep them short. Oh, I love that band so much. Mm-hmm. How to start a men's group at a parish without being too formal? I've been in a new area for about a year, and with a young young family, haven't been. I'm super involved in the parish yet. Makes total sense. There was a great small men's group at my last parish where we would pray, share a drink or a snack, and just chat once a month. I think there was a men's group here, but haven't seen it show up on the website / Bolton in quite some time. Just post a thing, just do it. Do get coffee in the morning, put it in the Bolton, put it somewhere. You just got to do it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I work for That Man Is You, but it's a thing. So if you want it to be a thing, you got to build a core team. You got to do these things.
Yeah.
If you just want it to be a chill thing, then host it at your house, meet at a bar, or go to some, like you said, a coffee shop. Get away from alcohol if you need to, and just do a thing. Like, why does it have to be anything other than that?
Yeah, and if the good people who run That Man Is You at Incarnation out in Dayton, I really get these two parishes confused. It's the one that's out like Centerville. If you could not do That Man Is You at 6 a.m. on a freaking Saturday morning, I would really appreciate it, because I would love to go and grin when you, while you're like on the video, be like, excuse me, I can talk now. but they're denying themselves that because it's at 6 in the freaking morning on a Saturday.
Yep.
Ah, what losers. How to best restructure a diocese as attendance in parishes go down. Okay, there are two ways. One is you take the Pauline model where you're in the trenches with people. Two, maybe more of like a Petrine where you're just trying to do your best to how do we support these people so they can do the best job that they can. We may not be able to be in the trenches with them, but what can we give them? That's pretty much it. In the past, it's been more like risk management / just like maybe trying to make some waves, and we'll do all the dirty paperwork that the bishop's got to be responsible for. I don't really see your job being much else beside that, pretty much.
When you have to consolidate parishes, a lot of people don't understand. One, it's a function of economics, and two, of demographics. When tons of people move away from small towns and small cities to bigger towns and bigger cities, you can no longer economically support a parish. So if bishop, and then when you have a rapid decline in priests, you no longer can support a parish. And then you're making one priest responsible for three different church buildings. So they're traveling an hour or whatever between masses. You're killing your priests. And then that further demoralizes them, further isolates them, and it's crippling our church. So I don't have all the answers. I do think closing some parishes is definitely an answer if you can't support them. But I also know that priests are so exhausted, even like the good ones don't do relational ministry with youth. And because they don't do that, maybe out of fear, maybe out of this, that, or the other, youth don't think about becoming priests. So we will perpetually have an even worse priest shortage. The more you spread a priest out on Sundays, he can never get to know his congregation. It's going to be a vicious cycle, and you're creating it by your bad administrative decisions. So don't do that.
I think it's so funny that we both took it from our different
past
roles. I went immediately to the cure, and you took the point of view of the parish. Okay, we only have a few more. I think we could do this.
Cool.
Are pets part of the family, or are they just like freeloaders with sometimes adorable personalities, part of the family?
I love my dog, but my dog is not my child.
Yes. I mean, it doesn't have to be. It's not the same thing.
Right. But there are people that treat it like that. So when you say a part of the family.
But that doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean where it's
then a part of the family.
Yeah.
But there are some people that do that. I have friends that call their firstborn child their third child.
Yeah, that's a bit absurd.
Thank you.
But that doesn't mean that really like exists. That's what a pet being part of the family automatically means that you're that. That's an extreme form of that.
Right.
What are your plans for the eclipse?
I really do want to go and travel. I don't have any plans right now, but I really want
to. It's supposed to be incredibly cool here in Dayton, but I will be flying back with Everly the day before from going to my cousin's wedding out in Phoenix, not to work. But she has a day off of school, so I don't know what we're going to do about that. How to respond to kids questioning Catholicism. Like my son just heard yesterday's reading where Jesus says, if you are not with me, you're against me. And he said that he doesn't like that kind of tolerance that the church teaches. I responded that Jesus is our God, so he's not going to mince words when it comes to bringing his children home to him. But he thinks it sounds exclusionary. I also reminded him of last Sunday's reading about the woman at the well. He wasn't exclusionary. He was welcoming, but not ingrating.
You want me to go or you?
You go first, but I have a thought. So keep yours to half a minute.
I think it is so important to have these conversations with your kid. It's just like the sex talk. Don't make it the talk. When you talk about the language of exclusivity, you need to understand something. The church is absolutely exclusive, and it makes no bones about it. Our Lord is, but our Lord is exclusive in an inclusive way. What that means is he offered himself for the salvation of the whole world, that God sent his only son because he loves the whole world, and Jesus Christ does not want any soul to go to hell for all eternity. However, it's his rules, not our rules. It's his game plan, not our game plan. So when we want to tell the Son of God how the Son of God ought to be, ought to live, ought to reign, we're being actually prideful, arrogant, stupid creatures who are very small-minded. And so instead of micromanaging the universe, why don't we just understand that when God sends the Son, he's not sitting up there saying, yes, there's all these different pathways to me. I sent my Son down one of those pathways, but does it really matter? Nah, that's not it. Now, with all of the other stuff about salvation, we can go much more in depth at another time.
Yeah, I would just add to that that Catholicism is the improv religion in the sense where it is the yes and. Jesus tells people what they need to hear. Some people, like, you know, I know some people don't like the song All Are Welcome. And it is a terrible song with a very, like, weird and somewhat heretical, like, message. But all are welcome to the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Like, this is where I get a little bit, like, this is where, like, my little, like, I guess Mike Luke's side comes in. It's like, no. Like, everyone's welcome to join. Everyone's welcome to come to Mass. Everyone's welcome to be a part of this. Just because you can't receive communion doesn't mean that you are participating in Mass, that you're not. And if that's what you think it is, you have a misunderstanding of what Mass actually is, and you need to get your ass to confession and back to, like, CCD. And so this kind of like a version that people have to, like, no, aren't welcome here. It's kind of bullshit. But that doesn't mean that people aren't, like you said, excluded either. Like, there are things here that are hard and that you have to, you know, and that, like, that if you're going to do this, like, it means that some people are going to be excluded because if you're not, like, doing this, then you're against what we're trying to do here, which is, like, the true, the good, and the beautiful, and, like, the salvation of the world. And so, but, like, we're the great yes and, like, religion, where we are horrible sinners who are deeply, deeply loved and have also, you know, infinite worth. And I think it's okay to, like, I think you brought up a great point about, like, having those conversations with your kids. The only thing I would probably say is, like, if the kid, you know, is, like, questioning this, they may be questioning the divinity of God, which is where I wouldn't really go down that like road. I would probably do it a little bit more on just, like, here's what I'm talking about. And if you're not for that, then you're, like, automatically kind of have to be against that. But that's, like, you know, I truly believe that, like, we are I really do love this about Catholicism. Like, there's so much nuance, and it's kind of amazing, and it's actually insanely comforting when what you're going through fits in some of the nuance, and you kind of see your place or what you're experiencing within the great plan of salvation history. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I always make sure. Oh, sorry.
No, I was gonna say, don't shy away from that. Like, it's not an actual contradiction.
Yeah, and never shut down the questions from your kids.
Totally. Yeah.
A questioning mind is a sign of a mind that is awake and takes it seriously.
Yes.
So you want to have the conversations when I do high school talks, I talk about this all the time. I'll say things like, St. Thomas Aquinas is a doctor of the church, and yet one of the very first questions in the Summa Theologica that he asks is, does God exist? So if the guy writing the summary of theology is asking these questions, don't you think that you can too? Of course you can. Now, it pays to read the answers, and most of you probably won't do that, but that's like, the church is not afraid of your questions. The church is afraid of your apathy. So ask the question.
I had a lot of questions, particularly like in junior high. I was like, is this all a big game? Is this a joke? Is this, what does all of this mean? And I think one thing that we also cannot underestimate is the ability to ask, and I was able to ask my dad this, I was able to talk with my mom about this and have honest, deep, deep conversations. And I saw their faith. I saw the faith of their friends in our prayer group. I saw the faith of other, I saw people's faith. I was surrounded by a cloud of witnesses like around me all the time. And being able to see that and explore these questions, that's like, it's super important to like keep in mind the, you know, the like teaching of the church, which is that right now, what modern man pays attention to are like witnesses, not teachers. And if they do pay attention to teachers, it's because they are witnesses. So it's like your witness and the witness of the people that your child encounters through your community. That's the foundation for all this other stuff. That actually gives them the ability, like you said, to ask these things and to ask them out loud to you.
Yeah.
It shows that there's like something there because they like can recognize, okay, I see some stuff here, but like, what about this? And that's great.
Okay. It's a beautiful thing.
We did it. 1 hour and 25 minutes.
You know what's
crazy?
You're
doing it, Peter. You're doing it.
I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan right now.
Heard of it. Hello, Father Steve Blackson.
I will be in Connecticut tomorrow night for 3 days, and then I fly home. And the funny thing about all this is I have to get up and go to this men's conference at 6:40 in the morning. That's when we leave. So I have to wake up at 6. And I was just thinking, does someone else have something at 6? Oh, right. Luke has to go to That Man Is You at 6 o'clock in the morning tomorrow. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, no. I'm not going. I could go.
No. You're going to FaceTime me. And the moment I come on that screen, you have to take a selfie and then turn off the video. You go, listen, guys, he's a blowhard.
I'd be like, guys, listen, I've seen him naked, not like in the nude, but like bits and pieces. I can put it all together.
Yeah. Also, I do want to say there's a video. It's like 7 minutes long. Oh, no, 12 minutes long from Kevin James on the Joe Rogan podcast. And it's like a clip.
Yeah.
And it's called Kevin James on Cheat Days and Losing 60 Pounds After Fasting for 41 Days. And he is literally giving the autobiography of my life. It is amazing.
We should try to have him on the show. I tried to get Scorsese on, but his publicist said, no, we're going to pass. Here's some other weird people that you guys could have on. I was like, no, I just wanted Martin Scorsese. That was it.
Special thanks to Franciscan University Conference Office for sponsoring this episode of Catching Foxes.
I paid $5 for us to join IMDb to get that publicist information.
That's so funny.
All right. I love you.
I got to go. Will you stop the recording?
Yep. 5, 4.
You don't have to count down. You just hit the button.
Oh, okay.
I already said goodbye.
Joe, edit out the F part so that Franciscan doesn't get mad.